Coming up on this episode of DL Weekly, ticket, park hopping, and photo pass changes, some restaurant shuffling in downtown Disney, a Magic Happens dining package.
Disney 100 branding is everywhere, a whole list of closures, we talk to Skipper Freddy, and more. DL Weekly starts now.
Hello, everyone. Welcome aboard the DL Weekly podcast. Please lower your head and watch your step while boarding. If this is your first time listening, we hope you'll check out our website at dlweekly.net. If you have more time to spend, becoming an official weekly tier at dlweekly.net/support is an especially good value. Thanks for traveling with us today, and we hope you have a happy and memorable listen to this week's episode.
Hello and welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of January 11th, 2023. I'm Teresa Urban.
How are we? Already 11 days into January.
I know.
And I'm Tag Bushman. We'd like to send a shout out and a thank you to all the current weekly tiers, including Melissa V, Stephen W, Chrissy A, and Jolie K for supporting the show. Without your support, DL Weekly would not be possible. Your support ensures that the podcast will continue and we can make it to the parks more often to bring you the latest news and information from the parks. If you would like to become an official weekly tier, head on over to dlweekly.net/support to sign up. A quick program note, we will be sending out a survey to all of our supporters soon, so be on the lookout for that. Just trying to figure out some stuff about the podcast.
Well, our friends over at the Howard Johnson are offering some really incredible deals. Room rates in January and February start at just $149 a night. Those same rooms without the discount can run up to $219 plus a night. So, just a refresher, the buildings 1 and 2 are both the newly renovated buildings, and those room rates are starting at $169 a night. Parkview rooms are also included in these low discounted rates. To take advantage of these great deals, visit our website at dealweekly.net and click the Howard Johnson link. The discount code will also be there for you as well.
It's that time again for our friend Eric over at Concierge to catch us up on other Disney news.
Hello, everyone. This is Eric Johnson with Concierge, and welcome to the D180. While Teg and Teresa cover all things Disneyland, in the D180, we take a spin around the rest of the Disney universe, and we do it in 180 seconds. Let's jump right in. We start our journey in Walt Disney World, where Disney dining plans haven't returned. Instead, Disney is trying a new tactic for the moment regarding its discount on resort stays. Disney World released its discounts valid for the spring and early summer of 2023 just recently. For some days starting in July, halfway into September, you have your choice of deals. If your family misses showing up to the parks having paid for a mostly inclusive trip, Disney once again has an option. The old Disney dining plans were an option that was very popular, but also complicated. Trips to Walt Disney World resorts frequently featured deals on the plan that allowed families to budget for their Disney dining across snack foods, quick service restaurants, and sit-down dining destinations. It was a complicated affair, but what Disney World trip isn't? The current idea is somewhat more simple. As usual, discounts apply based on the resort at which you choose to stay across deluxe, moderate, and value resorts. The time frame of your visit this spring and summer season also makes a difference. These factors determine your level of discount on your trip. If you choose to go this direction with your discounts for a four-night or more Disney World stay, count on a range between $75 and $150 per room per night. You'll receive a Disney Dining promo card that you can use at most locations around the parks. Dining reservations at the sit-down locations are still highly recommended, but the card can be used at sit-down locations, quick service locations, and some snack carts across the parks and hotels. Don't count on them paying for your meals at non-Disney hotels, though. If you need some quotes or even a bit of explanation, call our expert planners at 856-OUR-EARS or send us a message through concierge.com. Our planners have spent the last couple of days boning up on this new promotion. If you need to see Walt Disney World sooner, we get it. Discounts are still available for the next couple of months while the Epcot Festival of the Arts kicks off from January 13th through February 20th. Check out this fan favorite festival that features art stands around Epcot. Fans of Disney merch, food, and original art can't lose at this festival. Running out of time here, so let's take a quick look around the world of adventure that we will soon see with National Geographic Adventures. Bookings for 2024 trips are opening up now for their many destinations around the world. Disney is even offering early booking discounts for those who know where they want to go. Set up that trip before April 7th and you can get between $400 and $750 off your total price. National Geographic Expeditions rely on their 130 years of travel expertise to bring you incredible opportunities. Each trip pairs you with small groups of travelers and a few expedition leaders. Travel to remote locations in Alaska, the Swiss Alps, Jerusalem, Patagonia, China, and so many more. These trips are not to be missed. What's more, I'm pretty sure looking at this list that I have a lot more that I can cover, but I'll save those Nat Geo trips for another week. Stay tuned, everybody. And that's 180 seconds. I hope you enjoyed our quick spin around the rest of the Disney universe. If you'd like to learn more about these Disney adventures or just have a few questions, please come on over. Visit the social media and websites of both DL Weekly and us, their official travel planners, concierges. We look forward to planning something special for you and yours. I'm Eric Johnson, and this has been your D180.
Well, thanks, Eric, for that update.
Now let's get to the news.
Well, there are a lot of changes coming to Disneyland tickets, park hopping, and more in the new year. Starting February 4th, guests with the ability to park hop will be able to switch parks starting at 11 a.m. instead of the current 1 p.m. time. More dates have been added to the calendar at the $104 ticket level. So that's like the daily tickets. That's the entry level one, bringing it up to nearly 2 months of days at the lowest ticket price. Throughout the Disney 100 celebration, digital attraction photos will be complimentary starting on February 4th. This is limited to digital attraction photos only. Also announced were more opportunities to join the Magic Key program throughout 2023 as pass inventory becomes available. For all the details, check out the link in our show notes.
This is going to sound absolutely ridiculous, but the one that was most exciting sounding to me, which it's not even the best one, but it was the most exciting, was complimentary digital attraction photos. I think this is such an easy, oh, yeah, but also very fun thing for Disney to do. And this is all guests. It doesn't matter if you're a Magic Key holder, if this is your first time, your 1 millionth time to the park, does not matter. All guests are eligible for these free digital downloads of your attraction photos. And I think that's just smart because What is everybody doing anyways? They're taking a picture of the screen, you know, so may as well let them enjoy the nice version that doesn't have the print and all that all over it, and right, it doesn't have the glare of the screen on it too. But I thought that was so fun and so exciting and something that's so easy. Obviously though, lower ticket prices, more days is also super great as well.
Yeah, at this point I feel like the park hopping thing, moving it from 1 to 11 seems like, I'm not even really I wasn't sure before, but I'm even now even less sure of kind of what the point of limiting the park hopping is, other than to try to make it a little more flexible with the park reservations. I did see after we wrote all of this and right before recording that in a interview or something like that, let me just double check what it was. So Josh D'Amaro gave an interview to the New York Times where he said that the new announced changes are a result of just listening to guests, which is good.
That's good.
Yeah. So, you know, that's some of the positive stuff we were hoping for. I think 2 months worth of $104 ticket level is also great. And like you said, the photo pass stuff is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. A real low bar, but a great value to people. And you're, I was going to say the exact same thing what you said, which is people are taking a picture of it with the phone, with their phone anyway. But I was actually surprised to see these changes. It wasn't something we had heard rumors of or anything. It just kind of dropped.
And speaking of things that we were surprised to hear, the closest location to get food in the Esplanade abruptly closed this week. La Brea Bakery announced the closure of the Downtown Disney and all other non-airport locations to focus on their partnerships with distributing their baked goods to other locations. The location will make room for a temporary tenant before being demoed and becoming the location for the new Portos that was announced back at the D23 Expo in September.
Yeah, this was interesting to me because there was like a rumor or something, I want to say like late Sunday night or something. And then Monday, they kind of talked to everybody and that was their last day of operation, or they were only open for like half the day. I don't know what it was.
It was just kind of weird. It was just like announced on their Facebook that were closed today and forever.
What's interesting to me, and I did not know this, was La Brea Bakery is the only location in Downtown Disney that has been there since the beginning and has never been renovated or refurbished. So if you would have gone to La Brea Bakery on the opening day of Downtown Disney way back in 2001, it would look exactly the same as it does now. I thought that was interesting. And I kind of feel like it's like a moment of sadness because they've been there since the beginning, and that's a long time.
Well, and they offered a lot of great options. You know, and our hearts do go out to all of the team members and cast members, well, the team members that worked at the Downtown Disney location, because this is, you know, it doesn't seem to me like they were told ahead of time. So they kind of came in thinking that they were going to work that day, and oh, nope. The location's closed. I'm sorry, you don't have a job any longer. You know, that's a really difficult situation. So my heart goes out to all of those folks impacted as well.
I did see that Disney was working with them to see if there was a place in Disneyland or DCA or somewhere else in Downtown Disney that they could move them into or transition them into. So
hopefully.
Now, I couldn't talk about the sex thing in that last one because it is this news article.
Yes, we did hint at the next news article here.
Yes, fans of great tasting, inexpensive food can now rejoice. Earl of Sandwich, the sandwich shop that was torn down with the rest of the AMC theater complex, has announced its return. In the near term, it will be moving into the La Brea Bakery location, adding a sit-down option until a new location is built elsewhere in Downtown Disney, likely in the west side where the construction is happening now.
This is happening in February.
That's a quick turnaround.
Like, Earl of Sandwich is supposed to open sometime in February, which is, crazy quick turnaround. But not only the cool thing about the La Brea location was, like you said, you have that sit-down option, but there's also, a quick service window. Mm-hmm. So you could grab your sandwich to go potentially much quicker and easier than at the previous location, because the previous location didn't matter if you were sitting there and eating or if you're taking it to go, it was the same line. Yeah. It was the same, the same queue for that. So I'm very interested to see how they utilize that, if they utilize that, if there's going to, is it going to be kind of like Jazz Kitchen, where you've got the side thing where you can just walk up and get your beignets? Can you just walk up to the side and get a sandwich if you're taking it to go? Or, this, like you said, go inside and do the sit down option.
So here's my sadness with this.
Your sadness? What is sad about this?
I'm so excited that Earl of Sandwich is coming back, first of all. So no sadness there. However, I wish this was the location they were staying in, because it is the closest to the gates.
Sure.
And so it would be so convenient. And because Earl of Sandwich has always been at the other end. So if you wanted to get out of the park and get an inexpensive option for lunch, you had to go all the way through Downtown Disney. And you're going to, when they move to their new location, they're going to go all the way through that. So the fact that they're just temporarily in the front, I mean, I'll take it for the temporary time they're in front, but I kind of wish they were staying close like that, because I think I would eat there more, or I'd be more likely to eat there more often if it was so close to the front gates, because then you could just get something.
What we had done in the past, because we grabbed it for lunch one day when I was there with my family, and we were in Disneyland, so we just hopped on the monorail, took the monorail over, hopped off, and then hopped on the monorail to get back into the park, which was a very, very nice, relaxing ride to and from, instead of, said, trekking all the way through
Downtown
Disney.
You might have convinced me with the promise of a monorail ride that would take me there. That could be good.
Not as easy of a thing with DCA, but the other problem, not really problem, the other thing that we face is there's just so many good food options now in the park that our lists are already overflowing of what we want to eat while we're in the park. And then we've got, of course, this. I want to try Portos, because it sounds like Portos has, the baked goods, but they also have lunch and dinner-y, maybe at least lunch, maybe not dinner, but more meal option type things too. And then, of course, we have, why am I blanking up? Blaze. Then we have Blaze, which is also not located on Disney property, but it's a neighbor, it's so delicious.
I wish.
So much good
now,
food.
I used to really like Naples, but the last time we ate there, the price had skyrocketed. I wish that they didn't have pizza there, because I would love for Blaze to come to Downtown Disney.
That would be wonderful.
But I don't know. You're right. There's too many good options. I'm glad it's coming back, though, for sure.
Well, speaking of downtown Disney dining options, Weekly Tears who like dining in the once highly themed Ralph Brennan's Jazz Kitchen will be sad with the changes that come when it reopens. Jazz Kitchen Coastal Grill and Patio will be the new name of the location. Guests who have experienced the new design have found it plain and mostly unthemed. But the refurbished location should return after a quote-unquote short time, according to Disney. Din Tai Fung was announced at the D23 Expo this year and has some new concept art. In the concept art, there is a round bar surrounded by tables for diners to eat at. The new location will be on the west end of downtown Disney, but no opening date or timeline has been announced. It looks so gorgeous. This inside concept art looks beautiful. Stark contrast to what they're doing to Jazz Kitchen. Yeah. Jazz Kitchen is getting like plain and like very like bland looking, but so this new place looks so cool.
During lunch today, I wanted to, while I was eating, I wanted to put like a video on to watch while I was eating, and I watched David's from Fresh Bakes latest construction sure. video where he was talking about it. He said that he showed Liz, his wife, mm-hmm. a picture that one of their viewers sent in of the inside of the Jazz Kitchen now. And he said, "Where do you think this is?" And she goes, "Is it a retirement home?"
Oh, no.
Because it does look
plain. It's very plain.
Bland. There's like no theme.
They've stripped all the character, and it really breaks my heart.
But you're absolutely right. Din Tai Fung looks the exact opposite of this.
It looks incredible. It looks beautiful.
What does Din Tai Fung have again? Is it just kind of like Asian food?
I don't remember what, because it's not like a Disney specific.
Oh, Liberty said dumplings and noodles.
Yeah, I was going to say it's not Disney specific. I remember that.
Oh, they have bao. Well, I'm excited to try that and figure out what's going on. Mm. You know what else disappeared that we didn't talk about for a while?
I'm looking at their menu online right now. This was a mistake.
What was that? What was that food truck that showed up for a little while?
Sweet and sour pork baby back ribs. I don't remember what the food
But do you
truck
remember
was
it was
called.
Like that Asian food truck and it was there for like a month or something?
I don't remember.
Oh gosh, they have dessert bao. Anyway, let's move on. When Magic Happens returns, there will be a dining package available to guests at the Plaza Inn. Each dining package will include an adult or child meal, plus a voucher for reserve viewing access to the second performance of Magic Happens each day. The package is available every night, except for Disney After Dark event nights of April 9th, May 13th, 14th, 29th, June 18th, July 4th, and July 8th. These dates will be in our show notes. The adult meal is $45 per adult, with the child meal priced at $25 per child. Dining reservations need to be made between 1 p.m. and 3:30 p.m. to take advantage of the package. So your dining reservation has to be within that window.
I'm sorry. I just realized something with this news article that's made me very curious about other things. So this news article comes from the Disney food blog. And did you not notice something here? The package is available every night except for Disney After Dark events on April 9th, May 13th, 14th, 29th, and June 18th, July 4th, and July 8th.
We
don't know what those Disney After Dark events are yet on those days.
That is true.
That has not been announced.
Well, there you go.
Sorry. I was very stuck on that. I was like, wait a minute. Hold up here. When we were going through news today, I completely glazed over that fact because I was so excited about the dining package. But now when you're reading it, I was like, hang on a minute here. Detective skills coming out. Okay. So Magic Happens dining package parade. I'm excited, or dining package for the parade. I'm excited about this. And honestly, I should look up what the price of a meal at
Plaza Inn.
At Plaza Inn is, because I feel like
the chicken meal was like $20 or whatever.
Yeah, I feel like the price point isn't outrageous by any means. So the adult meal comes with short rib and fried chicken.
So here's the question. I have questions about this, which is why I didn't write it in the script of what the meals were. So it says short rib and fried chicken with pesto, mashed potatoes, and seasonal vegetables, as well as a dessert. Is that all together?
Yeah.
Or is it you can pick short ribs or chicken? And like pesto.
Your meal option is the adult meal or the child meal, and the adult meal includes short ribs and fried chicken, along with the pesto, mashed potatoes, and seasonal vegetables. Sounds delicious to me. And honestly, it doesn't, like, price point wise, it's not terrible. It's too bad you couldn't add I don't know, pay an extra whatever amount to split it, because it also sounds like it's a lot of food.
Well, and the thing is like, I mean, I wouldn't pick this dining package because I don't like the short ribs. So, and I just kind of want the fried chicken. And this pesto mashed potato sounds interesting. I don't know. There's so many questions I have. And then the child's meal, by the way, just to cover all of our bases, is chicken tenders, mashed potatoes, and seasonal vegetables and a dessert. And everybody, so the adults could do a fountain beverage or a Dasani water, and the children's thing comes with a Dasani water or a low-fat milk.
So just to kind of put pricing into perspective, the normal chicken entree is $19.49. A dessert is like $6.99 or $7.99, depending on what you get. And then what is a fountain beverage is
like $4.
$4.59. Sure. So
you're up to
20 plus seven.
For about $15, you're getting, for a little under $15, you're getting the parade viewing.
Yeah. So, yeah. So before tax and depending on what exactly it is you get, it's about roughly $32 for the chicken meal, a dessert, and a drink. So yeah. $45's not too shabby.
Do you like the idea of the short ribs and the fried chicken and the mashed potato?
Yes. I mean, we know how much I adore the fried chicken. They have beef pot roast there. I've not tried short ribs from the park. I don't think. Definitely not from Plaza Inn.
Sure.
So yeah, I would be very excited about this. Like I said, the only thing that makes me nervous is it sounds like it's a large amount of food. Because
a lot of things are.
I know, but each
food.
Time I go to the parks, I like take a piece of chicken from someone that got a meal and have a side salad, and like the chicken breast and the side salad is plenty for me. Sure. So this sounds like tons.
Sure.
For me. But yeah, I'm excited to see it returning though. Well, the Disney 100 celebration doesn't kick off officially until January 27th, but you wouldn't know it from all of the stuff that's already in and around the parks. New Disney 100 plates, cups, and popcorn buckets have arrived at the resort. The disposable popcorn bucket is shades of purple and white with the Disney 100 logo with 100 years of wonder underneath. The coffee cups are a similar design with the standard soda cups sporting red along with the purple, sharing the color scheme with Coca-Cola. The paper plates feature the purple design around the edges of the plate with the Disney 100 100 Years of Wonder in the white center where the food goes. Okay, this is ridiculous. I think these are beautiful.
I am happy because I love purple.
They're
and
so cool.
The theme color for this celebration is purple, so I'm very excited by that. I know it's nitpicky, but go with me here. I wish they would roll all of this out when the celebration kicks off.
Oh, yeah. I'm not sure why.
Because there was stuff there when we were there in mid-December.
Oh, merchandise, yes.
Yeah, but like, couldn't all of that wait until the 27th and have like a big kickoff?
Well, yeah, I don't know. I think part of that was we were there at the end of the holidays. So a lot of the holiday merch had already moved out the doors, so it was we're just in a weird transition period right now.
Sure.
I think. And I think we're just more aware of it because of the internet.
Sure.
Maybe it's always been like this. I don't know. Maybe they did used to wait until a specific date and keep these things kind of hidden. But the other thing that's kind of nice in doing it this way, to me, this is like left field but still related, sure, is I think this helps with like demand. I think this helps with people not just getting park reservations because this is the day the merch drops kind of has like the Black Friday feel and merch craze for when this merch, you know, if they have
just
an official
randomly shows
if,
up.
Yeah, with official release dates versus it kind of just kind of showing up. Yeah.
Sure.
So it may be intentional for reasons kind of like that.
But I like the design.
I'm telling you though, like I almost wish these weren't disposable because that coffee cup, I would take coffee in that design of coffee cup to work every day. No problem.
I am certain that sometime during the 100 celebration, there probably will be a
Turvis
tumbler or whatever you can buy.
Oh, not
that
a Turvis,
looks like
but
this.
There is like a hot beverage mug that's been spotted. Mm-hmm.
Well, from now through January 18th, Magic Key holders can pick up a Disney 100 print featuring Mickey and Minnie gallivanting around Sleeping Beauty Castle. The castle features the decorations for the Disney 100 celebration, the fountain, and swans in the moat. The print by Asia Ellington is distributed in the extended queue for It's a Small World every day at 1 p.m. while supplies last back in Fantasyland. If you see a long line, don't be deterred. It does move quickly.
This was interesting to me because we're so used to all of the Magic Key offerings happening over in DCA by the Silly Symphony swings recently. So it's fun that they switched locations and this is now, you can pick this up in Disneyland instead. I do have to say I am sad that we're not going to be there during the times that this is the giveaway. It's such a fun print. It really looks like something you would find easily for sale in Wonderground. Mm-hmm. It's so cool. I like it. I really, really like it. I really like it a lot. It's
getting me excited for the fountains, which then sent me on a journey to see if anybody has caught any type of construction work that had been done for these fountains that
because
were only 17 days away from needing to be working.
No. Because remember when we were in the parks in December, we were peeking down in there. The infrastructure for the fountain is down there. And I want to say someone had told us that back when the fountains are not a new thing for the lagoon. So I'm thinking it's the old infrastructure and it's still.
I feel like it's been so, like, in my memory of ever going to Disneyland, I don't think I've ever seen the fountains.
Yeah.
So.
No, I've never seen the fountains in my memory of visits to Disneyland either. But
I do.
We definitely saw the infrastructure though in the pools, remember?
What somebody said is with the swans in there is they hope that the swans come back to the moat. Because they used to have the swans in the moat all the time.
I don't think that's going to happen.
I'm guessing that it's a liability issue.
They're mean.
Well, I mean, they don't have to be mean.
No. The swans are mean. Like, what do you mean they don't have to be mean?
Who did you think?
Are you going?
Meant?
I don't know. Are you going to go have a strong talking to those swans and tell them to be nicer to people?
If they can do like a zoo and they can put invisible barriers that they won't.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, so they're just kind of in their own designated area. Yep. Anyways, yeah, this print looks gorgeous. So I am very excited for all the weekly tiers that are able to go and pick one of these up because, the colors, it's just fun and exciting. We even have, did you see Tinkerbell's even in this one? Mm-hmm. Mickey, Minnie, of course, like you said, the swans, Tinkerbell. The print again, yeah. And I can't remember this little bird's name, but he's from Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway. Or he reminds me of the bird in Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway, if it's supposed to
be
or not.
I wish we could get one of these prints, but we're not going to be there for it.
Gorgeous.
We also didn't get our Magic Key Holder canvas bag last time we were there.
No, each time we went over there, they were already gone for the day. They were super popular. Well, more details have been announced for World of Color 1 coming to Disney California Adventure later this month. The viewing areas will be accessible through the virtual queuing system in the Disneyland app. A virtual queue reservation is not required, but highly recommended.
Was there anything else with this that you wanted to talk about?
That was kind of the big thing, the virtual queue. But a link will be in our show notes because the Disney Parks blog did release more footage than we had previously seen. More sneak peeks, more snippets of what's to come with World of Color 1.
Sure. You know what's funny? I see this shot with Grogu in it, and I don't think I've seen a video clip of it. I've just seen pictures of it.
Oh, could be.
I just want to make sure I didn't miss anything with that because the only new piece of information, I feel like they keep, every time they talk about World of Color 1, I feel like the marketing department at Disney has this like paragraph that they're like, make sure you tack this on. And it's always like, World of Color 1 shows the strength of how just one little thing can ripple through and do all this. Yes. And I'm like, okay. Like, it's just, for some reason, it just seems like they're really about telling you this
Star Wars, Galaxy's Edge.
Justin and Rafa. We need the new ambassadors to make some ridiculous, maybe they will with Mickey Minnie's Runaway Railway.
No, they can have some cool tagline as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, new Disney 100 standard popcorn buckets have arrived as well. For $12.25, you can pick up the standard white bucket, which is wrapped with the 20s Art Deco style and Disney characters with Disney 100, 100 Years of Wonder logo. Disneyland is represented by Sleeping Beauty Castle on one side, and Carthay Circle Theater represents Disney California Adventure on the other.
I know we talked about these popcorn buckets, specifically the Magic Key Holder popcorn buckets. So I know we went on and on about the popcorn buckets. I will say this, that Magic Key Holder popcorn bucket, the artwork on this, this needs to be a print.
That's what I was just going to say.
It's gorgeous. It is so, I love, again, the color. I love the style. It's so fun. And the regular one is fun too. Of course, purple. We love purple. But it's still that fun, like Tag mentioned already, that Art Deco style. The whole gang's there with their fancy new outfits for the celebration.
Mm-hmm.
It's super fun, but man, the artwork on that other popcorn bucket.
I'm not a fan of the animated Walt Disney.
That's
fan.
Probably my least favorite part. But look, it's got Pluto's Corner. He's standing at Pluto's Corner yep. with Mickey.
No, the rest of it, 100% would buy it, would get
the
a print.
The bench, look at that. The yep. bench is in there. I mean,
look,
there's so many little nods.
They got the hitchhiking ghosts. And
it's so good.
Yeah, it's a really great print. It's a great bucket. I wish they'll probably have a print or something like this.
Maybe.
I feel like they need to have that.
Maybe.
So we'll see.
Well, what would a Disney celebration be without some food and beverage items? This was crazy. So there isn't, just to kind of let everyone know, as we record today, Tuesday the 10th, there is not an official foodie guide from Disney that has been released. However, if you go on the app and look at the different menus, or a very easy place to go is, we've got linked in the show notes, is the Orange County Register. There's a list. These items are already showing up, even though they haven't announced them with a foodie guide yet, which I'm a little confused by, because they're really good about foodie guides. So I'm
right.
surprised we haven't gotten that yet. So what are some of the things that are standing out to you, Tag?
I don't know. So when I was writing this story, I'll be honest with you, for some reason, a lot of places were talking about this lemon tea cake.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, that's the only thing I saw. And I got frustrated with it. And I didn't look at the whole
There's
list.
There's a lot of lemon going on.
But
there.
I did see the pineapple shrimp skewer at Bengal Barbecue. And I would totally try that. And a chocolate red velvet parfait at Galactic Grill also sounds amazing.
Well, and Galactic Grill has a blackberry cucumber limeade.
You're a drink. Mm-hmm. You're the drink person.
Hey, how was that iced tea, that Thai iced tea you tried?
That was really good,
exactly.
But you were the drink person in general.
Sweetened iced tea with vanilla whipped cream over at the Jolly Holiday. I'm curious about this lemon tea cake as well, because it's at multiple locations. Looks like we've got a Mickey Mouse-shaped blueberry scone over at the Jolly
Did
Holiday as well.
Did they not have this before?
It might just be themed to Disney 100, the gray
okay.
stuff, because I feel like they use the gray stuff. They have a holiday or like a whatever celebration version of the gray stuff.
This just sounds like a lot. A barbecue picnic dog at the refreshment corner. It's pulled pork topped foot-long hot dog, Coca-Cola barbecue sauce and coleslaw with a mandarin orange or a small bag of chips. That sounds just like a lot of food.
What do you think of the blueberry maple bacon funnel cake fries that are going to be found over at Award Wieners?
I'd try
sugar it. And bacon coated funnel fries drizzled with maple syrup and topped with whipped topping bacon and blueberry compote. Interesting.
I feel like I want the foodie guide to come out because I want to see pictures.
I need, yes, there's no pictures.
Why
yet.
Is lemon the thing? They've got a lot of lemon.
I feel like spring, you know, it's more lemon and berries, kind of more of like spring flavors for
did
the
you,
season.
Did you see your esquite corn fritters have come back?
They are still there. Yes, and I didn't get to try them, so I'm excited about that. The Pacific Wharf Cafe has a Chipotle chicken sandwich.
An Asian beef burrito at Studio Catering Company. Mm-hmm. That could be good. Yeah, so there's some good stuff on here.
Lemon tea. What was that? You know me and my drinks. Sweet lemonade tea with honey and a lemon wedge. Blue raspberry lemonade. Ooh. Which is blend of blue raspberry lemonade, limeade, and blue cotton candy syrup with swimming gummy fish that can be found over at Smoke Jumpers. That sounds like a lot of sugar.
I don't know how to feel about that.
But it probably looks really cool.
A lot of good options like usual. Well, Weekly Tiers, who will be visiting the parks in the near term, should be aware of some of the refurbishments that are happening now and in the future. So currently closed is the Adventureland Treehouse, which will continue to be down until later in 2023. Mickey's Toontown until March 8th. It's a Small World is removing the holiday overlay now through January 19th. Indiana Jones is down until spring of 2023, along with the annual refurbishment of Grizzly River Run, ending on the same for the spring of 2023. The Disney Gallery and Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln are transforming for the Disney 100 until January 25th. For future closures, we have Radiator Springs Racers, which will be closed from January 17th through the 23rd, Mickey's PhilharMagic from January 24th through February 3rd, The Haunted Mansion will be removing its holiday overlay from January 30th through February 9th. And the Inside Out Emotional Whirlwind is also down January 30th through February 9th. If I said that too quick, if there's too many things, check out the link in our show notes for the complete list.
So the other thing we want to note, too, is with the Adventureland Treehouse and Indiana Jones both being down, something else has been impacted, and the pathway in Adventureland is now closed. So if you take a left and go into Adventureland, you, of course, can get to the Tiki Room, Tropical Hideaway, the shopping area there, the Jungle Cruise. You can get all the way to the Bengal Barbecue, and that's as far as you can go now. So you cannot continue through and connect up with New Orleans Square. So if you want to go to New Orleans Square, go through Frontierland for now instead. So I'm very curious about this. And my gut feeling is the, what was that water feature? They're installing that. That's why this is closed. Because with the Indiana Jones being closed, it's very easy for them to block off that area to be able to install that. What was it? The water buckets or whatever?
It's like the water feature that they have.
That was on the original treehouse, I think, is what's coming back and why it's made such a kind of weird construction wall land.
I did see somebody commenting that they feel bad for the cast members. They're going to have to tell thousands and thousands of people, you can't go this way if you're trying to get to New Orleans Square or Frontierland. You got to go the other way.
I hope... I haven't checked the app today, but I hope they almost like update the app. You know how they've made like Toontown disappear and like Bugsland disappeared. And I hope that someone goes in and edits the map so that at least the app is not showing that there's a pathway there to maybe help with some of that.
Do you know what's kind of scary about this? If you take that part out, there is two technically, but direct pathway. There's just that one section by Riverbell to get you over to that side. Because otherwise you have to go all the way through Galaxy's Edge and come back. And I don't think people think about going through Galaxy's Edge to come back to Critter Country.
Right.
They think, go that way. So, and then on those nights that have Fantasmic performing, that is going to be a nightmare.
I was going to say, just think about the congestion that you get in front of Riverbell normally.
Yeah.
You know, so, and it's going to be that much worse. Well, it's going to be that much worse because there's, that's the main way now. But anyways, we just wanted to let everyone be aware of what all of the different closures are. There's a lot of different ones happening. And yeah, to let you know that Adventureland is a dead end right now. So there's that. Well, speaking of Adventureland, Patrick Bagora, known as the Little Man of Disneyland, is returning in an all-new story and Little Golden Book. In this new adventure, Mickey and friends help Patrick find his lost hat in Disneyland. Another Little Golden Book is Santa Shops at Disneyland, which follows Santa, his reindeer, and some elves' yearly Christmas Eve visit to Disneyland. And coming in May is a Pirates of the Caribbean Little Golden Book. And to fill out your collection, there is also a Disney Parks Little Golden Book Library, which includes It's a Small World, Haunted Mansion, Jungle Cruise, The Orange Bird, and Space Mountain.
You know, when I was a kid, we had Little Golden Books. Like, I feel like everybody had Little Golden Books. So it's interesting to me that all of a sudden it's kind of having this, like, resurgence, at least.
I think it's fun.
It is fun. I like that they're having another Little Man of Disneyland story. It does look really cute. The artwork looks really good. Same thing with the artwork for the Santa Shops at Disneyland, which looks like fun. The storyline there seems to be, like, on Christmas Eve, Santa's reindeer and elves like stop at Disneyland and they ride the, you know, the Matterhorn and stuff like that, which is really kind of fun. So
it just looks so cute. And the thing that's fun is the original book. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the original book is basically Patrick and Disney and Patrick and Goofy and Mickey and Pluto are like, or maybe it's Donald, but Patrick is talking with the characters.
Yeah.
And like, he says, yep, oh, it's okay. You can build your park here. And so that's kind of like the start of Disneyland.
Oh.
So it's fun to me that this is like the follow-up now that Patrick's been living in Disneyland with all these different guests visiting and how, you know, what that's like instead. Yeah.
He lost his hat.
They're
trying to help him find his hat.
The concept art that was shared in the article, of course, that's linked in our show notes. It's so fun and it's so cute. It's so like bright and vibrant. I love that this specific image that I'm looking at right now is Patrick standing at his front door in Disneyland, in Adventurelands. And how you're looking is you're looking at it as if you're like in Patrick's doorway and you're looking out into Adventureland, whereas we experience it as we're standing in Adventureland looking down into Patrick's like front door home area. So I think the perspective on this is really fun.
I like this one piece of artwork too, where he's standing on Main Street and it's like, it must be park opening, like rope drop. Yeah. And there's this just like silhouetted group of guests
very
like,
excited
coming
guests
towards him. By the way, did you see there's a hidden Mickey in this photo here?
Yeah.
So that should be really so cool. Fun. I feel like I want to try to. I wonder if these would be available locally, like at the local bookstore or something.
They might.
Yeah. I'd like to go look at it.
DO Weekly announces the boarding of the Trivia Express, nonstop star speeder service to the moon of Endor. All passengers, please prepare for immediate boarding.
Welcome to Trivia Land. How are we feeling tonight? It's my first time of 2023. I'm excited. Are you excited?
Well, I'm excited if you're going to go easy on us.
I saw when I walked in today that Vern was looking at attraction videos for stuff, and I'm like, oh no. Oh,
I had strict instructions. I wasn't allowed
do that
to
one tonight,
walk behind his walk behind him at all while he was.
Was double checking an answer of a question, and I wasn't able to find that answer, so we're not doing that question.
Got it.
So, take what you saw is not what you're going to get. Sorry.
No, and that's fine. I'm just saying, like, I still have no idea because there could have been a billion things from that one.
So many
true. Yeah, I mean, just because you saw me watching a video, you don't know what I was looking for. So,
yes.
But no, I'm excited. We got some great listener-submitted questions, and I think we're off to a great start of the year. So let's get to it, huh?
Sure.
All right. Our first listener submitted question coming from me for 2023 from listener Kate A. In Luigi's Rollickin' Roadsters, there are 10 male and 10 female roadsters that all have their own unique looks, except for the twins, who are identical apart from their eye color. What do all the male cars have that differentiates them from the female cars?
I'm going to say like a chrome bumper or something like that, like because it'd be like a mustache.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think they have a mustache. I'm trying to remember, and I should know this because we
sat there
last
forever.
Trip, had to wait for it to be reset because one of these cars had hissy fit or whatever. It was like not wanting to play along with cousins.
They had to open up the back and reboot it.
They did.
And then they had to reset the whole thing.
And it was a male car because I remember looking at it and thinking, oh, we don't want to get in that car. That car just threw a temper tantrum. We
Did
want
we
nothing
end up
to.
Getting in
we
that
ended
car?
Up getting in that car. Yes, so that was the last car that was available, and that car did have a mustache. So I'm also going to go with mustache.
You think mustache, huh?
Yeah.
Mustache. Final answer.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Your second question, submitted by listener Kavei S. The primary "Paint the Night" parade song was featured in which Disney movie?
Wreck-It Ralph.
Yes, Wreck-It Ralph. I'm proud of you. That was a Disney movie question. And I just used that same song for our last. I just put a reel on Instagram of trip highlights, and I used that song because it's so fun.
So, Wreck-It Ralph, is that your final answer?
Yes.
All right. Our third regular round question, submitted by listener Brooke A. After the Disneyland Main Street Electrical Parade closed for the first time in 1996, what parade took its place?
Oh, what was it called? Something magic. I just remember when we talked with Robin, the former ambassador, she talked about how she was the ambassador when Light Magic came up, and it was like a whole like, it's a follow-up to the Main Street Electrical Parade.
Yeah, the Electrical Parade ended in 96, and they started Light Magic in 97.
Yes.
Light Magic Parade, is that your final answer?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. And your fourth and final regular round question, submitted by listener Todd B. When Avengers Campus opened, they told the story that the land used to be an old Stark Industries compound that was converted to meet the needs of the Avengers. They even included a map of the old compound. What non-Avengers attraction is directly referenced on that map?
Ooh. I'm going to say Heimlich's choo-choo train, just because I love Heimlich.
What? Can you repeat just the end part of the question?
Which non-Avengers attraction is directly referenced on that map?
I do feel like it's
Mater's Junkyard Jamboree, because it's like right next to it.
Yeah, I do feel like that. I thought it was a throwback, though, to Bugs Land.
Mm-hmm.
But you think it's Mater?
Yeah. Well, you might be confusing it with the fact that like when the Wasp comes out, she's got like the little
they've got that.
Yeah, so I think it's Mater's Junkyard Jamboree. This is not my answer, Vern, but if it's not, then it's probably Luigi's Flying Tires, because that's the other close attraction.
Oh, so you're just thinking like,
but I think
spatially
it's Mater's
with the map.
Because of how things work, yeah.
Maybe it's like the Hyperion. It could be so many things.
I think it's Mater's Junkyard Jamboree.
I put Mater on there for you.
Okay, And you put Heimlich?
I put Heimlich. Perfect. That was my original answer.
Final answers, Ryan.
Final answers. Mater's Junkyard Jamboree and Heimlich.
Yes.
All right. Heimlich. And your bonus question tonight, submitted by listener Donna S. Previously, at the entrance to Disneyland, what did the sign say?
Can you be more specific of what sign you were
referring
to? As
you're walking up to the entrance, or it used to be as you drove up to the entrance, or I mean, I guess currently you still can kind of drive up, but we always walk up.
The happiest
place on earth.
There's
the sign. It says Disneyland Resort, but it used to say...
I mean, I feel like the if we're talking about the same
prior
sign,
to 1999.
So one...
Oh, the happiest place on earth.
Yeah, the happiest place on earth. I was going to say, because the one was a marquee, so they'd change it.
Yeah. But I think he's talking about the main thing. So, yeah, it's Disneyland, the happiest place on earth.
Is that your final answer?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, listeners, how do you think they did? How did you do listening at home? If you stick around until after the discussion topic, we can all find out together.
Well, this week for our discussion topic, we are talking with a former skipper, for real this time, podcaster extraordinaire, an executive producer at Storyland Studios, Freddie Martin. Welcome to the show, Freddie.
Wow. Thank you so, so much. I do have to correct you right away. You see on the sign behind me, once a skipper, always a skipper. You can take the skipper out of the jungle, but you can't take the jungle out of the skipper. We are a tight-knit fraternity and sorority of the greatest green river-blooded goofballs that have ever sailed a boat on rails. So we're just, we do get offended when you say former, and I will forgive you. I can't wait to find a reason to forgive you, though.
Okay.
We'll find that.
Skipper Freddy.
There you go. You can call me Skipper Freddy.
All right. Well, let's, I'm excited for you to take us on the journey of your career and everything as we go on.
So with that, I'm just excited. That intro was just so fun. So I can't wait for your answer for this question. Can you please tell us about your Disney story? And this is just kind of how you got interested in Disney and or Disneyland.
Yeah. Okay. My elementary school years were spent in Placentia, which is just the next town over from Anaheim. My the church I grew up at is on South Avenue and Sunkist. And I went to junior high in Anaheim. So Disneyland was so close. And for, you know, a pastor's kid and not having a lot of money, it was also so far. So, just to get in, I had to sell a bunch of newspapers at the for the Orange County Register to get tickets to go to Disneyland or whatever it happened to be at the time, which is strange because they were $9. Right.
Wow.
Did people not have $9 to scrape together so a kid could just run over to Disneyland for the afternoon? No. It was a little bit different in the 70s. But yeah, growing up down the street, I want to tell you this funny story. It's like this is how the pixie dust got in the blood. Whenever people would come into town and, you know, family and friends would come into town, they would want to go to Disneyland. But we, family of five, weren't going to go also to spend all the money, but we would go to Disneyland Hotel. So Disneyland Hotel was this wonderful oasis just for an evening. And you could watch the fireworks from there and go into the tunnels where the waterfalls were. I mean, it makes me so sad that my kids never got to experience walking through the waterfalls at Disneyland Hotel. But also, you know, it was also this place where from time to time, there was a special moment when our family would go or dad would take one of us for our birthday. And Disneyland was super special to us. And I remember where I went to church was about 3-4 miles away from the park. And after Sunday night church, all the people would go out to this little grass area. And there'd be punch and cookies and people would just stand out around and talk, blah, 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 blah. So the parents are talking and the kids are chasing each other or playing volleyball or whatever. And then this strange thing would happen. All of a sudden we'd hear the boom, boom, boom of fireworks bouncing off the buildings. And all the kids would go like this. Because then it meant it was 9 o'clock, 9:30, whenever, 8:30, whenever it was happening. And that meant we had to go home. So we were like, oh, but then what was so sweet and magical is there's this one spot on that field where you could see between the buildings, the neighboring junior high school, and you could see between. So everybody would naturally line up into that spot. So we were kind of like clustered in this little phalanx, tip of the spear type shape to watch the fireworks. And when it was over, you knew you had to cool down and get in the car, and we were going home. And so Disney stuff has always been in my blood. I tried to be an animator, cartoonist. And so there was also this animation side of me that just desired to be part of all that magic.
That's awesome. That's wow. So awesome.
You know, I have to commiserate with you because I miss the old Disneyland Hotel as well, because our family friend who got me into computers, so like Teresa said multiple times on the show, I'm like the tech guy for the show, but he went down there for a conference and we stayed somewhere around Disneyland, but we didn't go to Disneyland, but we went to the hotel. And I remember having a wonderful evening just being, you know, in what the equivalent of the Anaheim Disneyland bubble is.
Yeah.
Hanging out when you had the Jungle Cruise boats that you could control.
You could drive.
You had the waterfalls, like you said, that you could go in and around. The Fantasy Waters show.
Oh, which my goodness. Yes.
Was like
they just finally took that stage out. That stage has been there right up until they started the construction of that new building.
Really?
So now that stage that just sat there as a little planter was my core memories, is watching that Dancing Waters show.
That whole area, though, was just so... You didn't feel like you were in Anaheim in the middle of a hotel with all this waterfall, because there was paths that wound around and did all this stuff, and you could go under, and it just felt so cool. And it's kind
colorful
of,
lights.
And as cool as the Disneyland Hotel is kind of now, like there's different cool things, but I don't know. I think it's like what you said, like a core memory of that.
And they had this lagoon with raised platforms that went over the lagoon. And so you had the reflection of light on water and a little bazaar space. I think it was called the International Bazaar. And you could buy a shirts from, or like a dress from Egypt, or you could buy some tiki mugs or little things. And forgive me when I say poor, I don't mean real poor. But the big treat was to get a watermelon popsicle. We were like, oh my goodness, we got to get a water. And not only that, you could hop on the monorail and take a loop into the park and come back out. So you there was part of the train that was only for hotel people at the hotel. So you'd load into that one. And when you got into Disneyland, into Tomorrowland, the doors wouldn't open. And then
that's
you would.
Smart.
Yeah. So it was beautiful, wonderful opportunity to kind of live and breathe the Anaheim greenery.
That's like in Disney World when you could take the monorail and look inside Epcot and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And
exactly.
What the heck, Disney, bring that back. All right, well, on to question two. When entering Disneyland on the first day of a visit, which way do you go? Do you go left towards Adventureland? I feel like that might be the answer. Do you go straight through the castle to Fantasyland? Do you go right towards Tomorrowland? Kind of what's your game plan on that first day?
Well, I listened to your interview with Mel McGowan a few months ago, and he mentioned the tunnels. And actually, when I first read this question, that's where my brain went, was to the tunnels. So I'm going to answer this in two parts. Let's answer with the tunnels first. I always went left, and I'm not sure why, because human beings tend to go right. Especially, human beings who drive on the right side of the road, they tend to move right. Now, at Disneyland, the crowds kind of force people to go somewhat equally. But I think if you were to do a count, you would see that they're all going to the right. Mm-hmm. But we would go left. In recent years, I started going right because I was part of this Facebook group called Welcome Back Riders. And their little gag was to post on Facebook a picture of yourself in front of the Mr. Toad's Wild Ride poster with like the Mr. Toad's eyeballs. and so in order for me to participate in that, I started going right, which I kind of love. But we would go left. And left did mean Adventureland. But this really fun thing happened with my dad on my 10th birthday that I'll never forget. And I still try to recreate it a little bit. It doesn't work as much anymore. Like they know beyond this, but they used to do the rope drop. Okay. 10th birthday. So it's 1981. The rope drop was a little bit back from Coke Corner. So Coke Corner was past the rope drop. Like now they get you all the way up to the Walt statue. Right. And all the way up to Tomorrowland. But back then it was isolated to Main Street. And so my dad and I, we saw this huge crowd of people and we went into the Emporium. And as we were going, we kind of looked and we saw that we were passing the crowd. And eventually we passed the front line of the crowd and got ourselves to the last door of all of those shops that are tied together on purpose to make you buy things and make you stay longer. And we got ourselves to the very front at Rope Drop on my 10th birthday. And we were probably, in kid parlance, we were a mile ahead of everybody else. yeah, but it's probably maybe 30 feet ahead of everybody else. But we made a left turn. And at the time, the longest, it felt like the longest line to wait in was Pirates of the Caribbean. So we headed straight to Pirates of the Caribbean. So that was the long, that was my main tradition for the longest time was Pirates of the Caribbean first. But then you really had to start getting good at timing, you know, with fast passes and and apps and everything. I got really good at doing five mountains in an hour and all that, that kind of stuff. There's not five mountains. How many mountains are there? Oh, if you can, if you include Indiana Jones, I would kind of play that game.
The e-tickets in there.
Yes.
Very cool. So what is your favorite attraction? And we're nice, even though this is a Disneyland specific podcast.
Yeah.
You can choose any from any of the Disney resorts.
Oh, you're so mean. Because that just blows. It put, you know, it's.
Okay. What's your favorite at Disneyland?
Okay. Disneyland, you know, it's really hard to beat that Jungle Cruise. I mean, I know how that feels. It's really hard to beat Jungle Cruise, and that, but there's a reason for that, and that's because it takes up so much space. Like if I can kind of remember going on the mine train through Nature's Wonderland, I have two little slices of memory that I go, I know I was on that ride. That thing took up a huge amount of space, you know, like the Rivers of America size of space. And the Jungle Cruise now is, you know, it takes up so much space. It's the biggest ride at the park. And the setting is really a real, now it's a real rainforest. Like it's a real biome that grows creatures. Like there's stuff there that lives and breathes and it's no longer a fake garden. And then you add on top of that, the animatronics, not audio animatronics. There aren't any audio animatronics at the Jungle Cruise. So, and they're those Mark Davis sets, right? Still some of them left around that really bring out that humor. And then you have that human element. And there's such a connection. Same thing happens over at Storybook Land, Canal Boats. There's like, this is my person. This is my person for this journey. And my person cares about me enough to make me feel welcome and make me feel fun and to pick on me. And my person wants to make this a really good time for me. My person's willing to fire a gun to protect me, right? There's so much stuff there. So for those reasons, but Jungle Cruise is just, it's really high up there for me. The audio animatronic masterpieces of Haunted Mansion and Pirates of the Caribbean, it's just unrivaled anywhere in the world. Are you guys Florida people too? Do you like the?
I mean, we've been to Florida.
Yep.
Yeah. So the American Adventure.
Yeah.
At Epcot is a masterpiece.
Mm-hmm. I still have no idea how they move all those things around.
It's so cool to just think about. Yeah.
And it's what, 50 years old? I mean, it is. No, 82. Are we at 40 years old?
Yeah.
It's so tremendous. It's so absolutely, you know, all of the craft that goes into Imagineering is happening on that stage in such a way that just absolutely blows your mind. But I'll tell you, my very favorite attraction, and I'll get emotional talking about this, is Sad Eye Joe at Knott's Berry Farm. So in case people aren't familiar, a lot of people miss Sad Eye Joe at Knott's Berry Farm. They don't know what it is. They've never seen it. They walk by it. They might peek in.
I've seen it, but I don't know the story either. So this will be good.
Mm-hmm.
So Sad Eye Joe is the most low tech possible show anywhere in the world. It is ridiculously lame and small and useless. It's a useless attraction, but it comes from this heart that Walter Knott had when building Knott's Berry Farm, which is, I got to sell more chicken dinners and I got to sell more boysenberry pies. And so the lines are long. I might as well try and entertain people. Mm-hmm. And so he started adding things like a Conestoga wagon and a variety of different little peep-in type of things. And he created a ghost town. But part of that ghost town was this guy, Sad Eye Joe. And Sad Eye Joe is a horse thief, spelled horse thief, because people who live in Calico at Knott's Berry Farm don't know how to spell, apparently. And he's in the jail for stealing horses. And if you go in, he's a hand-carved wooden statue of a cowboy. Well, Sad Eye Joe, if you don't know it, you'll just walk up and suddenly he'll start talking to you.
Yeah.
And he's not a computer talking to you. He's not a sensor. There's actually a voice saying, "Hey, how you doing out there? Nice to see you. How are you doing?" So here's a magic breaker. So magic spoiler break here. But parents need to listen to this because I'm about to give away the thing for the parents. The kids, go out of the room. You do not want this magic. Kids do not want this magic until you have kids of your own. And that's this. If you turn down this alleyway that goes to Sad Eye Joe, there's right next to that alleyway, there's a little window on the it's a bordello. It's like, this is what's so crazy about Knott's Berry Farm is they have a little bordello. There's a window, and that if that window is open and there's a pad of paper sitting right there, there's a guy inside there with a microphone who's playing Sad Eye Joe. And what you do is you say, "Hey kids, go see who's in the jail." And then you very quickly write on the piece of paper your child's name. And then you say maybe blue shirt. Maybe you say likes guitar.
Sure.
Right? And so while you're doing that, he takes it from your hand and you catch up to your kids because they moved faster than you did. And he said, and he goes, "Well, hello, Janie. It's great to see you. I heard, how have you been? Are you enjoying Knott's Berry Farm?" And the kids are perking up. They're going, "How does this creepy statue know my name?" He says, "I really like that pink shirt of yours." And then he says, have you been playing guitar lately?" And the kids are just amazed. But here's the thing. My dad would do that to me. And man, I was the oldest. So I was always trying to figure out, well, what's dad up to? And I figured it out a little bit too early. But he would always add something that was just a little bit special to it. So I'm sorry. I'm going a little far off of the Disneyland thing. But this
totally
is why.
Okay.
This is why this is the greatest attraction. And I challenge any theme park to recreate what I was able to recreate in this situation. Now, there's amazing stories. I'll grant this. When you see a character, a Disney character signing to a kid who's deaf, or you see them calmly talking to a kid with sensory issues and the kid like doesn't appear to be in the conversation, but you can tell immediately when they like, those are the kind of moments. So this is that kind of moment that you can recreate at this space. So I started when I had kids and when I had nieces and nephews, I started prepping myself before I got to Knott's Berry Farm. I wrote a paragraph or bullet points about each one of my nieces and nephews or my kids. This is Daniel. He likes to play guitar. He picked up Minecraft. He loves Minecraft. He's just got an A on his test, right? So all these different things. And I would write those things down and I would come that prepared that I would slide it into the thing and walk down. My kid would never see me do that thing. And then we get to the front and here he is telling them their bio. and telling them how great it is. Well, it's great. You know, your parents love you very much. Now he get like the guy who's just a theme park worker.
Yeah.
Is suddenly engaged in the story and starts to really go for it. And I've had a couple times that the Sad Eye Joe goes, the guy in the windows, I can't do all that. And you go, no. Just try if you can, whatever you can do. And then before long, they really get into it. I'm getting to my point here. After my dad died in 2019, my mom and my brother and his family, we all went to Knott's Berry Farm. And I did my thing. Like I prepped it. I knew all the things about the nieces and nephews. I knew all the things about everybody. And we were creating a line behind us because there's all these people waiting to see what is so interesting here. And when it came to my mom, I had written information about my dad. And Sad Eye Joe said to my mom, Becky, it's so good to see you here at Knott's Berry Farm. We know that Fred would have loved to be here with you. Like, this is the first, sorry, I'm breaking up. This is the first year that he's been gone. And Sad Eye Joe, who my dad had seen when he was a kid in the 50s, his dad pulled this same thing. Sad Eye Joe is saying, we miss him. He means so much to us. We know how much he means to you. And our whole family's bawling, right? And I challenge theme park people around the world, look for the opportunity to meet people in their greatest joys, greatest pains, like find that spot, because we're at a place in theme parks where we've done everything. I mean, where there's subtle differences, but can you do something that transforms people in their minds and their hearts and gets them to go, you know, go join the Foreign Legion, you know, go do something great in the world, go fund a water well in Africa. Like, how can you transform people from just having fun into doing something amazing? And I think that's there. I think that's, so that's why that one's my favorite. And I apologize for going so long.
No, not at all.
I didn't know any of that about Sad Eye Joe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's really incredible. And the thing, you know, you make a great point. And same thing even with the Jungle Cruise. There's something about these things that, you know, they're not the most technologically advanced thing, but you're right. They just, it's the human connection.
Even
though Sad Eye Joe's not, you know, he's just his kind of funny little statue self, but it's still, it's that human connection. Same thing with the Jungle Cruise skippers, is you have this experience, this shared experience with the skipper, and well, you know, they make it or they break it. And we've been really fortunate to have some amazing, amazing skippers. Oh, yeah. And every time I go to the park, I may have only been on their boat once, but I remember them, you know. So it's very cool.
I will say, I think that the thing that I like most about the Jungle Cruise is that it reminds me in a way, it's got that same thing that the Aladdin and Musical Spectacular had, which is, it's the same thing, but it's different every time.
Yeah.
So, you know, like Aladdin, you'd go because the genie was going to be amazing. And the genie was going to give you different jokes and different, like, it was never the same show twice. Mm-hmm. Even if you went and saw it in
back
the same,
back,
like, week or whatever, totally different.
Yeah.
And so I feel like the Jungle Cruise is like that, because depending on who your skipper is and depending on what they decide to have be their jokes that day, totally different. Mm-hmm. And so I love when I haven't been for a while and there's new content that I'm like, oh, I thought I'd heard every way you can juggle this. One of my favorites recently, and I say recently, it was like 2 years ago at this point, was the part with the two African bull elephants.
Yep.
And they saw the one, I don't remember what happened with the first one, but the second one, he's like, I've got this one trained. And they had the timing down that when they said stuff, it would make the noise or like shake its ear or whatever. And I was like, that's brilliant.
Yeah, it is. I loved writing that joke. I loved doing at night, or similar to that joke. I loved doing it at night. And I would say, we've only got one of these African bull elephants here in the jungle. It's amazing. When at night you have a spotlight.
Yep.
And so you can shut off the lights and only use the spotlight. And so you just hide, you go over here's our, and he's the only bull elephant we have here. And he's an amazing jumper and he can leap right over our boat. So I go at the count of three, leap over our boat, Tusker or whatever I called him, 1, 2, 3. And then I would take the light and spin it over the trees. And what that does to your brain and your mind is you see something move. And now all of a sudden I'm over on the other side. And people, you know, there's some groups would fully buy in. And the rest of them would go, we know what you did. It's just some fun of being a skipper. It's like,
I've not ever had that one. That's a new one.
That is a new one.
That was a Freddy special.
Now, I'm going to forget. I don't want to like get to the good part or anything, but do you have a favorite joke that you told on the Jungle Cruise? Was that your thing?
No. Is it on your list?
Yeah. I'm like, steal my questions.
No, you know what? It's funny. I loved when you're in it, right? When you're doing this bit, it's like the whole boat. It's the whole cruise. So it's funny to say, is there a favorite joke? That the whole thing gets you from joke to joke to joke until they're fully yours. Like, there's nothing like getting to the end of a Jungle Cruise ride and having everybody applaud. And not because you told them to, but because they're legit. They really, and that didn't happen every time. It doesn't happen every time. Treat your skipper next time and be that first clapper. Like, that, it fills us up. But the whole joke, like, the whole thing is the joke that makes most sense. Now, I know that's not what you're asking for.
that's a good way to think of it.
No, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. But by the end, when you're saying to somebody at the Python, and you're at the Python and you say, this is a Python and they measure 3.14, like, see, I don't remember pi anymore. They, right. And they catch what you're saying.
Yeah.
And they're done because they're so, it's been funny all along. That's where the fun comes in. But you got to go back. This, I worked there in 1989 and 90, right? So one of the things about the jungle is there's this constant tightening of the rules about what you're allowed to do and a constant loosening of the rules. I mean, that is natural in any business. If you tighten up, or like think about your apartment landlord, right? They tighten up the rules and you hate the landlord, and then they loosen it up because they want to have a nice place to live. And then everybody, everything goes crap. And then people are leaving their trash bags outside their apartments. So then they tighten the rules. Same thing would happen in the jungle. You were able to say these jokes and you would get away with just being your own self. A lot of us, you know, fancied ourselves potential stand-up comedians. Like, our weekends would be going to stand-up shows. Could we do stand-up too? And so you'd try out material, and then they started hiding executives in your boat, or even showing up out in the jungle. Like, you'd see, wait a minute, that was that a person there behind the giraffe? But so there was a time I was trying to be topical. And so there was this set of jokes for the baboons. The baboons used to be at the African Veldt. Now they're just before the Lost Safari Camp. Mm-hmm. And we would say, oh, look, all the animals have come down to the river. Over here, we have the look at the baboons. All the baboons are here. We'd say, remember, this is the 80s and 90s. Say, Pat Baboon, Debbie Baboon, Daniel Baboon. Oh, and there's their little hairdresser, Vidal Baboon. If you don't look good, we don't look good. It's like, what in the world? We were like doing at one point, I made up the world's worst joke and it did not fly. I tried it maybe three cruises and I gave up on it, but I was trying to be super topical. Zsa Zsa Gabor was a celebrity, and she got stopped by Beverly Hills police, and she slapped
the cop. Yeah.
She slapped the cop and she went to jail. And so that week I was trying to be, I suppose, like the genie was on those shows. I was trying to be topical, and I said, oh, look, those zebras there are dressed just like Zsa Zsa Gabor is this week. And it would just fall flat every time. But I thought I was so stinking funny.
Because it's like a prison outfit.
Yeah, it's prison,
right?
Outfit. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
For those really of you who are listening who didn't get the joke.
It's a stretch. You have to go back and watch Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? And then you'll get my joke about striped prison
there
garb.
There you go. Well, since we're already starting in on it, we're going to. No, that's fine. We're going to backpedal a little bit. Okay. So we learned about how you grew up loving the parks. So how did you become a skipper? What was that process?
Yeah,
was that something you always wanted to do? Did you always want to work at the happiest place on earth? Or did it just kind of, how did that happen?
Well, definitely. I've had to think about that a lot because of the industry that I work in. These conversations come up. It's like, why do you do what you do? And there, so some people might just say, oh, I remember liking the movies, or, you know, I've had to think about it. Like, why did I end up on the jungle? And I think there's part of it that goes back to my parents and going to the park, and that being like for my dad and myself, and this idea of masculinity being like adventure, and we were going on an adventure and it felt real. You know, you do not know that there's a parking lot on the other side of that stuff. You do, your brain doesn't even calculate that. And you really did just leave into danger. Mm-hmm. And so there was something about that. I loved animals. I had a little jungle set that I created my own little jungle cruise in the backyard, probably in fifth grade, that I dug out holes and then filled them with hose water so I could hide the hippo in it.
Wow.
And it was like ferns. It was just a bunch of ferns. I got in trouble because I dug up some part that needed, like, I killed the fern. So there's this little side of me that's like, something about the stories they were telling at Disneyland creeped into my brain as what I wanted to do. But, you know, as a little boy who had parents who grew up in the 50s, right? My mindset is on this adventure thing. So when you would go and see Davy Crockett, or you'd go up into the fort at Tom Sawyer's Island and shoot a gun, like fake shoot a gun, and you would go see the horses. It's just like, there's all of this. And it's funny. It's hard for me to remember Fantasyland clearly before it got changed over in 1983. And I think that's because I remember Alice in Wonderland quite a bit. But I think that's because I was the oldest, so my choices won over my little sister. So I would imagine she probably has as few memories of Fantasyland as I do, because we didn't go to where her story being told in her head and her heart might have taken her first. So, you know, I would really love to, like, latch onto the memory of the Chicken of the Sea boat. Like, I can't stir that up. But anyway, so when I was in high school, we moved to Oregon, and I found a buddy who was into Disneyland as much as I was. And at one spring break, my senior spring break, we decided we were going to take the Greyhound bus and we're going to buy a ticket and go into Disneyland. We'll go stay at your grandparents' house and it'll be awesome. So we did that. We rode in the Greyhound bus and we got to Disneyland. And it was the summer before Splash Mountain opened, or it was the spring break before Splash Mountain opened in 1989. When we got there, we realized that the kids who were running stuff were our age. And there was this little spark, like, oh, this is a thing? This is a thing you could do? Because we were isolated up in Oregon. Like, you didn't have any celebrity people that you were into, because they never showed up on your radio station or your TV station. It's Portland TV. Yeah. Like, right. the biggest celebrity is the guy who would run the AM kids show, cartoon show.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's like, we didn't understand, having been removed far enough from it, that you could work at Disneyland. And so that was my senior year. And that really started to burn on me in that last quarter. I could go to work at Disney. I didn't have any college plans. I was, you know, I had this mindset that I was going to go to Europe, or I don't know what I wanted to do, but I wanted to go to big LA. And I think I want to go to Disney, work at Disneyland. And so I sent in an application and they sent a letter back. And then I went down and interviewed, and you should have seen this is before I've graduated. I'm wearing my graduation suit in June weather, or May weather. And I walk in and I did the interview. I mean, it was the most amazing thing to me. And the thing that I did, they went around the room. I think they interviewed us in groups of three, and they said, well, if you could work here, what would you like to do? And people are going, I don't know. I remember this one guy go, I don't know. I'll just do whatever you want me to do. Like, that kind of attitude. And they're like, two people answered. And then they turned to me and I went, I want to be on Jungle Cruise and tell jokes and shoot the hippos. And I think I'd be really good at that. And I got the letter back and said, we'd like to start you in Adventureland Frontierland, which was the department at the time. And I couldn't believe it. I showed up the day I graduated high school. My station wagon was packed already. And my memory of it is that I left the graduation ceremony and got on the road, because I needed to start 2 days from now. My mom remembers it different. She thinks she watched me drive off from our driveway at home. I'll defer to her. But literally, I didn't even hate my parents. You know, like, people, you hear about people, I'm graduating. It's the second I graduate, I'm out of here. I wasn't angry with them. I just had to get out. I needed to get to Disneyland. And so that's what happened in my first shift was parade route. That was one of the things that they tended to have you do, but until they scheduled that's what I did. I, you know, waved people along with the Main Street Electrical Parade and the Disney Afternoon Parade, like waving the little baton. And then in 2 or 3 days, I got my training on the Jungle Cruise and did that first long 4 months there. And then they started training me on other things around Adventureland and Frontierland. I'll finish that thought. So that the little boy in me who always wanted to work with animals, who always wanted to be a cowboy, who always wanted to be a pirate, was now running the sailing ship Columbia, was releasing trains into the mines of Big Thunder Mountain, was running the shooting arcade in Frontierland, and working with live audio animatronic birds in the Tiki Room.
Yeah.
It was too much of a dream come true. Never forget it.
That's cool. That's what a story.
Well, you got to live your whole foundation of Disneyland. You got to go work your foundation of Disneyland
and get paid. Who gets to do that? You get to get paid to go do all the your favorite parts.
I wouldn't consider it paid. I mean, yes, they called it payday.
That's true.
I think my starting hourly was $5.35.
Wow.
I think it was in the late 80s.
It was late 80s.
Yeah.
My Dairy Queen job before that was $3.38.
Wow.
So $5.35 was like magic.
Where did you live in Southern California on $5.35?
My first tour of duty, which was about, I want to say, 8 months, I stayed at some grandparents who were nearby. And then I also stayed at an uncle's house. I guess I was couch surfing. And then on my second tour of duty, we had an apartment across Walnut Street on the other side of the Mickey and Friends parking structure. But it was Strawberry Fields back then. And the walk home after walking in Big Thunder Mountain boots for an 8-hour shift plus a parade shift. So a good 12 hours on your feet in Big Thunder Mountain boots. Murder. And then you got to walk from Harbor across the parking lot, across the Disneyland Hotel parking lot to your house. There was one night I took off it's my own fault. I was wearing Keds. Like, how do you go from Big Thunder Mountain boots for 12 hours to flat Keds? Yeah. And it was murder walking across that. I took off the Keds. I thought it would be better to be barefoot than it would be to wear these flat shoes.
That's right, because you worked there. There was no DCA.
Mm-mm. No DCA. No, parking lot was, this parking vast. I walked through the Eeyore parking lot, which is now Indiana Jones.
So what were, as a Jungle Cruise skipper and as, just the different attractions, I kind of want to go through, of course, Jungle was a favorite. What were some of your other favorites or highlights, or did you love them all equally?
No. Well, there's big parts of each one that is really, really interesting. Tiki Room is particularly wonderful, partly because it's so casual. You're not going to hurt anybody. You don't have to. There's certainly safety in case there's a fire in the room, right? You got to get people out. There's such a remote chance, but there is a chance you're going to drop a kid in between the boat and the dock at Jungle Cruise, which I did. We can talk about that later. No. But
Nothing to see here, folks.
But at the Tiki Room, there's this wonderful casual mood there that the way Tiki Room worked at the time was there are four positions to be in. So it was a cast of four for the Tiki Room. We weren't in food service, so the Dole Pineapple Dole Whip people weren't part of it. So and your four persons was one person stood out, and I think it still works this way, but one person stood out in front of the attraction and, counted people or whatever we were doing, just being a greeter.
Yeah.
And then the next person stood behind the door, and when it opened, you welcomed everybody in, and then you woke up Jose. And then the third position was over at the Swiss Family Robinson Treehouse. Okay. And you were watching people come in and making sure that they came back out. And then the fourth position was being on a break. Now, what's so amazing about Disneyland at that time, check this out. All of our positions were in these four, at Jungle, you were in a group of four. You were on one dock position, then you were in a boat, then you were on another dock position, and then you were on break. Well, if you pay any attention to what that means, you're 15 minutes in a boat, suddenly you get bumped out of the boat for 15 minutes and you're on your dock position. Then you go to break for 15 minutes. Then you come back for 15 minutes. You're back in your boat for another 15 minutes. You get a break, a 15 minute break every hour.
Wow.
That way. And fun fact about that is those four positions, some people were like, I don't need to go on another break. Don't make me go on another break. I'm tired of going on these breaks. So you would come back from a break and you'd say, hey, I'm bumping you to the next position. They would say, nah, bump through me. So you'd go to the next guy on the boat. And the guy on the boat's like, look, I've been having great luck. I love my cruise. Yeah, bump around me. And then you'd go to the third guy. They're like, bump around me. It's late. I don't care. You'd go back on another 15-minute break. Wow. So you could get yourself like hour-long breaks playing Galaga up in the break room if you played your cards right. But back to the Tiki Room. Tiki Room is so wonderful and sweet. And the music's good. And you actually don't get that sort of elevator music vibe from it. At least I didn't. Like, you can listen to it over and over again. It varies. It gets slower. It gets more exciting. And plus it smells good and all of this stuff. But also it's kind of a good napping place. So you're not supposed to take a nap.
Bert naps in there.
He does. Yeah.
Yeah. So there was this trick that I learned from some other Tiki Room people. So keep your eyes out for this. But we had a chair that was set up, kind of a high boy, taller, like bar chair that was sat right next to the control panel. Mm-hmm. And so as you walk in, you can see that control panel just to your left. Yep. And we would wake up Jose and we'd sit there. But nobody who works for the park is going to open up those big doors that let the sun shine in. Yeah. There's this little fake or invisible door behind you that your boss could peek in and come in. Well, if you lean your chair on that and close your eyes, you can fall yourself asleep. And the only way that your boss is going to come in is through that door, and they'll wake you up the second they do. So you end up, you know, having this wonderful, wonderful place. But so Tiki Room's super special because Walt touched it. And in training day, they took me downstairs to see the magic.
Oh.
Magic, spoiler. And the computers that ran the Tiki Room were these massive record players that took up a huge amount of space. And when I got there, they had transferred to tape. So they were running these giant tape machines. And it was like a block of tape machines, a block of tape machines, because each little bird takes its own giant tape machine. This is the late 80s. But they had, and it had, this is why the Tiki Room was so cold all the time, was because they had to have super air conditioner to keep it cold down in the basement underneath that. And now I'm sure it could be run on an iPod Nano, like the whole thing.
Right. Yeah.
It barely needs to do anything. But upstairs, this is another fun thing. If we could go upstairs, a second level of the Tiki Room, where all of Rosita, or well, Rosita's not there, but all the other cockatoos are all upstairs. There's this little platform up there. And if you look right above Tongaroa, the father of all gods and goddesses, from outside in the lanai, there's a little window that's open, and it creaks open, and you could sit up there and watch the fireworks and eat a Dole Whip. It was such a little dream spot, and it looks right out to the castle and Matterhorn.
Okay,
that's amazing.
I know that Skipper is the thing, right? But you're talking about the Tiki Room. Now I've got all types of Tiki Room questions that I've wondered forever.
Well, there you go. Now's your chance.
So what is the magic behind you come in and the doors have closed and you go out and you say, all right, everybody, help me wake up Jose. All right, on three, one, two, three. And he goes, and he wakes up. Do you hit a button and then you have a certain amount of time to get that done? Or like, how does that work?
Oh, magic, spoiler.
Well, coming. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it is. It's just timing.
Yeah.
The button, you hit a show button. All of the Disneyland parks, when I worked there, and I still look around for this stuff, they're all run pretty much by a little show button that, whether they're computer, like Space Mountain, computer run, the whole thing. Same thing with Big Thunder Mountain. But you can't leave a computer, mouse and all that stuff, to teenagers running a big dangerous ride. You have to give them stop and go, right? And so all of the rides had that big, but Tiki Room, you push a button and you know you have just about the right amount of time. Now, if you watched Maynard do it, he'd come out and he'd go blah, 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 and he'd tell his whole story. And then he'd secretly, just as you're paying attention to him, he'd hit the button. Then he'd know he had just the right amount of time. He'd walk over there. One thing you need to notice, and maybe you've noticed this before, but the original script was intended for there only to be beautiful girls running the tiki room. Oh. In mumus, you know, Hawaiian Polynesian mumus. And so when you wake up Jose, he says, ah, buenos dias, señorita.
Oh,
and yeah. Us guys, once they started hiring guys to do that, we would say, wake up, Jose, and don't call me señorita. And then he would say that, and that would get the crowd would laugh at that first little bit. So you got to be a part of that bit. But it's really just a timing thing. You once you've kind of learned your rhythm, you can't. You'll see. Sometimes they hit it. Sometimes they miss it. But, you know, it's not a lot riding on them saying, wake up, Jose. He's still going to wake up.
Yeah. No, I was just curious because sometimes, like you said with Maynard, he would kind of go on and on and on. And I'm like, and for some reason, because you're so distracted by his performance, you don't realize that he moves back over to that area.
Yeah.
And so it's like, how do you do? So I was like, do they like if everybody makes a loud noise, is that what triggers it? Or like because everybody goes, wake up, Jose.
Yeah, right.
So I'm like, is it triggered by like a certain decibel amount of,
you know, whatever? Who knows how they've done it? You know, they may have upgraded the system. At the time, it was just you've got 42 seconds or whatever it was.
Yeah.
You know, get everybody's attention, draw their attention to the bird and then walk away.
I'm very proud of myself because usually I'm the one that doesn't understand how things work, and I've totally watched them press the button and time themselves. So you're like, is it a decibel level? I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. Usually I'm the one that, like, I don't understand what just happened. How did they do that? And Tag's like, oh, it's real simple. I'm like,
oh,
okay.
I have some things about the tiki room, though, like that, like just dumb things that I should have realized way like that, that I should have realized way earlier
it's the magic,
in my life.
Tag. It's okay.
It is the magic. My two favorite things. I have like three favorite things about the tiki room. One of them is I love the enchanted fountain.
Yes.
I love that it goes up. And it took me forever to this whole thing's magic spoilers. It took me forever to realize
to figure out how that
happens. It's a plastic tube that elevates, that it's not there.
It's not powerful.
Yeah.
The world's most powerful jet of water.
Yeah.
That only moves to the degree that they want it to move. I know. It gives you such a, it's funny. I remember going to the Orange County Fair when I was a kid, and the Orange County Fair they were trying to sell in-home purified water, like have bottles of sparklets delivered to your home. And they had a big clear tube, giant, huge thing, like 15 feet tall. And on the top of it was what looked like a fountain or a water faucet. And then water was flowing down the side of the big clear tube. So it looked like there's this floating faucet up at the top of 15 feet up coming from nowhere, and people would stand around and look at that. How do they do it? So it's that same. It's a great gag. It's a beautiful gag.
But the other thing I always watch out for is I always like, so the carousel comes down, and I'm always thinking, I'm like, is that going to hit it? Is that going to hit it? And
it never does.
It's so silly. The other one is, for the longest time, I was trying to figure out, this is so stupid, I was trying to figure out what the musical instrument was, because right when they hit the top of the luau, there's like this and I was trying to figure out what the instrument was, and it dawned, I'm like, it's people.
Yeah.
It's people going, ooh.
And I'm like,
I am an idiot. Yeah. And this was like 2 years ago I figured this out. I'm like,
well, no, it's such a weird sound. That one that's going, it sounds like a theremin, one of those things that the Beach Boys used in it's just so weird.
I'm just really enjoying
that I somehow was a genius when it came to the tiki room.
I don't know, man.
Kegs, but things that
it's just like that thing, you know. It's just,
Tag, do you know how the rain's done?
Yes, the rain is brilliant, by the way. But
the rain is amazing.
That was just my dumb thing. Now, technical last magic spot, we can move on. So a couple things together, kind of. So you said there's like the basement, so obviously they've like dug down, which, like, for some reason it just never dawns on me that there's like a pit or something that all this stuff is in. But where's the down? And then you said there's like that up, like, how do you get to these places.
Okay. Go on Google Maps and zoom in on the building, right? And you can see that.
Oh,
the,
you're
speaking his language.
I love going to Google Maps.
Yeah, me too.
Satellite views. Yep.
Read, I have an article on FreddieMartin.net called Disney Secrets You Can See from Space. Oh. And I basically am using Google Maps to, you know, say, what does a satellite see?
Write that down, Teresa.
It's called Disney Secrets You Can See from Space. If you just Google it, you'll find it.
Okay.
But anyway, if you look at looking down at the Tiki Room and you can see where the Main Street building and that building join, right? Yeah. Well, you can see that those are all three connected. Those buildings, there's two restaurants connected. And what was once the Tahitian Terrace has that whole kitchen that still was in there when I was there, was shared for events and for the Tahitian Terrace. That whole kitchen is there. So there's this major backstage space that's between the Tiki Room. It's not that it's Tiki Room is butt up against Main Street. There's space in there. There's actually a lot of good space in there. There's a handicap accessible elevator to the right of the lanai. That's how they used to get people in there. Now there's a ramp that comes from what's that called now?
The Tropical Hideaway.
Tropical Hideaway. Now there's a ramp, but there used to be a door that went to a staircase that would go where that elevator was, or that ramp lift was. That was the door to go down into the Tiki Room's basement.
Wow. Okay.
And,
the Tiki Room.
In the depths of the Tiki Room. It was really cool too. Back then when I was there, the Tahitian Terrace wasn't run except for special events. So it's this big, massive chromed kitchen, beautiful, like cool, dark. And it's just like this really neat, like little piece of nobody uses this that we would, you know, hang out in and wait out our next
shift.
I'm so
glad they redid it to be something, because that was such a kind of waste of space. It's so great
now. It's a really cool space too. And I just love that they leaned into the tropical kind of island vibes and expanded on that.
Mm-hmm. Took the jungle story, the Society of Explorers and Adventurers story.
I'm very excited to get more of that with the treehouse re-theme.
Yeah. Have you seen the tiger prints or the cat prints in the Tropical Hideaway?
What? Mm-mm. No.
So there's a the story of Rosita and Jose is told in that area, and Jose has there's birdhouses for all of the girls, Suzette, Colette, Josephine, me, right? All of them have, you can see their spots, and then you can see Michael and Pierre, but Jose's is sort of right out in the middle, his birdhouse, and it's on a pole, and if you look around the base of that, some cat has been stalking Jose.
I'm gonna have to pay attention to that next time.
Got a little cat footprints.
I don't think I realized that Jose had his own little.
I gotta look for that. Somebody's got their walker in the way.
Yeah.
Around that photo. Yeah. Well, we'll just have to check it out next time.
Wow. See, this is why we interview people and this talk is to why, things because we learn. All
yeah,
types
it's a lot of
cool
lot of fun stuff in that area. My favorite prop in Tropical Hideaway is the big giant snail. Have you seen the big giant?
Well,
snail?
I have no.
Oh my god!
It's like this most. It's a skull. It's a it's supposed to be like not a native's arts and crafts, like a Middle Eastern arts and crafts, but it's this big, bizarre snail, and it's right up near the ramp that goes into backstage from Tropical Hideaway.
I'm gonna have to pay attention. There are a lot of really cool details. I'm not mad when I have to wait in line there, because I like looking like in the
corner, me too.
All of those lamps and all that stuff. Like, yeah, I'm the okay lamps with waiting there. Mm-hmm.
Have you noticed that all the bird cages and that? So there's a accessibility ramp up that backside that goes over. So that there's bird cages above there. All the bird cages have their doors open. So Tiki Room birds don't get locked away. They don't go into cages.
Wow.
That's cool.
Next time you're there, look for them. They're real subtle.
That's cool. That's, and you know, this is what makes, you know, this is what sets it apart, because they didn't have to weave that story into this new space, but they did. So I just love all
the details.
Easter eggs.
The details are so stinking rich, right? Yeah. So that's what we call it at Storyland Studios. We call it spatial storytelling. So how do you tell a story in physical space? How do you communicate to somebody that this is a lived in real place. I just read about something in LA. There's a, it's like an art installation, but it's an art installation for, and I think it's at MoMA or whatever the big LA art museum is, but it's a temporary exhibit of the workshop for the people doing the renovation of the museum. So it's made to look like a real old workshop, but I'm not sure if it's actually working workshop, but but they've got all the pieces in place that you might remember your grandfather having in his garage, like an old dusty oil can is up here. And then next to it is a news article stuck to the wall about a boxing match.
Yeah.
And then that boxing match, like set down here, you see the torn tickets of the boxing match. So what does that tell you? Like, this mechanic is a fan of boxing. He's been to these boxing matches. And it's like those kinds of details. When you work it into a space, you suddenly go, oh, I see what they're doing there. Sometimes they do it really well at Disneyland. Sometimes they don't even bother. You know, it depends on the budget that they had and the time that they had. Sometimes it's done so well. And sometimes it's like, or you don't even notice. You don't notice what isn't there. So that's fine. Mm-hmm. But when you see those things that tell you the story, it's wow.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, not that I'm not excited to go back to Disneyland ever, but now this is something extra to go spot. Super excited.
So we just wanted to let everyone know that Adventureland Day is coming up on March 5th. This is a very fun fan event that happens right at the parks. Freddie is actually part of the steering team that helps put this on every year, and he will be leading the Adventures Club all-purpose theme song yet again this year. But if you want to learn more about this really fun, amazing theme day that happens at the park, go to Adventureland Day on Instagram and Facebook. And the other fun fact is it happens on the same day on both coast this year. So Adventureland Day in Disneyland and Adventureland Day in Walt Disney World are both happening on March 5th. And again, if you want to follow and learn more, adventurelandday.com is where you can find out that information.
Yeah. So we had so much to talk about with Freddie. We will have a part two next week.
It's okay. I'll be the only weekly tier without an answer. Make sure you send your questions to Producer James or Producer Vern at trivia@doweekly.net.
Welcome back to Trivia Land. How do you feel about how you did tonight?
Feeling pretty good.
I feel pretty okay.
You say that every week, though.
No,
sometimes you do. All right, good point. All right. Well, actually, you did very well tonight.
Ooh.
So you deserve to give each other high fives.
Well, we'll find out
when you find
out.
Yeah. So let's see how you did. Your first regular round question submitted by listener Kate A. In Luigi's Rollickin' Roadsters, there are 10 male and 10 female roadsters that all have their own unique looks, except for the twins, who are identical apart from eye color. What do all the male cars have that differentiates them from the female cars? Both of you get in that correct, knowing Woo-hoo! That all of the male cars have mustache-shaped grills.
So there
high
we go.
Fives.
We high-fived in the chat.
All right.
I'm putting a picture of Rollickin' Roadsters with female and male mustaches. Cars. I love it.
Your second regular round question submitted by listener Kaveh E.S. The primary Paint the Night Parade song was featured in which Disney movie? Both of you knowing the correct answer for that one being Wreck-It Ralph.
Woo-hoo! Feel High good fives. About that one.
All right. And your third regular round question submitted by listener Brooke A. After the Disneyland Main Street Electrical Parade closed for the first time in 1996, what parade took its place? Both of you getting the correct answer on that one, knowing the Light Magic Parade was the correct one there.
I kind of wish I could go back in time and see Light Magic. Like, I never got to see Light Magic. It was kind of the superstar limo of...
Yeah, and it wasn't... I mean, there was a very short period of time. Like superstar limo.
Comparing it to superstar limo, that's not high praise.
I mean, people hated it. But I think that it's difficult because no matter what you put after the electrical parade... It's not going to be the electrical parade, you know? Well,
and that was the whole thing with when we were talking with Robin was like, those are big shoes to have to follow.
It is.
And your fourth and final regular round question submitted by listener Todd B. When Avengers Campus opened, they told the story that the land used to be an old Stark Industries compound that was converted to meet the needs of the Avengers. They even included a map of the old compound. What non-Avengers attraction is directly referenced on that map? One of you getting the correct answer, because Tag knew that it was Mater's Junkyard Jamboree.
Well, it should have been Heimlich.
Mater's Junkyard Jamboree is listed on the map as the scrapyard, but it has the same shape, including all of the buildings that exist in real life.
Oh, cool. Did you think that, or did you think it was more?
I thought it was more obvious than that,
That's a pretty subtle nod. Wow.
Yeah. I like it.
And your bonus question tonight, submitted by listener Donna S. Previously at the entrance of Disneyland, what did the sign say? Both of you knowing that from 1955 to 1999, the original sign said, Disneyland, the happiest place on earth.
Woohoo!
Was there a sign there in 1955?
Yep, the original sign at the very beginning stood there saying, Disneyland, happiest place on earth. And that original style sign, the original wording, the original style stood until the 70s, and then they changed up the style in the 70s, and then changed it up again in the 80s, and then changed it for the last time in 99 when they went to the current style. But the words, happiest place on earth, stood from 55 to 99.
No, that's wrong. They did not stand that whole time.
What site are you looking at?
Yesterland. I'm looking at one that says Disneyland Entrance Park and Hotel.
Yes, that's for the entrance to the park and the hotel, but at the actual entrance to the park.
Oh, you mean like at Harbor?
Yes, at 1313 Harbor.
I think they
Harbor.
Swapped them out because there was like America on Parade, but yeah, anyways.
Well, listeners, how did you do listening at home? How do you feel about how Tag and Teresa did? Do you think you've got some great questions that can really stump them next week? If you've got that perfect question and you're just dying to hear it right on the air, feel free to send that in to trivia@dlweekly.net.
Well, we will be back next week with more just the news and information.
Until then, go out and enjoy the parks.
Please remain seated until the podcast comes to a complete stop and the doors have opened. Then collect your belongings, watch your head, and step carefully from the episode. On behalf of all of our crew, thanks for traveling with us. And we hope you have a happy and memorable visit here at DL Weekly.